I am Neo. Welcome into the Skeptic Arena. Today is February 7th, 2010. The website is theskepticarena.com. Today's topic, an article by Matthew Archbold entitled, Atheists Love You, They Just Don't Know Why. He begins, Richard Dawkins has started up a charity called Non-Believers Giving Aid, so atheists can give to relief efforts in Haiti in a way which promulgates their atheism. Because, as I'm sure you know, when Haitians receive relief, they're very interested in whether it came from a believer or a non-believer. Matthew, if it doesn't matter whether the aid comes from believers or non-believers, why do you trumpet your charity every chance you get? Why do you claim believers give more aid than non-believers? Apparently, it does matter to you that the receivers of aid know that the help came from Christian organizations. So why do you begrudge atheists for doing the same thing that you do? He continues, Dawkins, who has been saying for years that religion is the root of all evil, is now oddly intent on proving that atheists can be as good as Christians. No, Matthew, he doesn't need to prove that. We already know that most atheists are far more moral than most Christians. This is mainly because people whose beliefs are rooted in science are far more rational than people who worship invisible ghosts. Atheists do not need an ancient magical book to tell them not to kill or steal. The fact that you do scares the hell out of rational people. He said, recently, atheists seem intent on proving they can be good without God. Matthew, atheists have always been good without God. There is no need to prove it. What you need to do is explain how you can be good when you violate nearly everything the Bible commands you to do. For example, why do you no longer have slaves? Why do you no longer sacrifice animals and humans to your bloodthirsty God? Why do you no longer stone to death adulterers, witches, homosexuals, and non-believers as your God commanded? Certainly Jesus can't get you out of this one. He made it quite clear that not one tittle of the Old Testament law was to pass away. Matthew continues, I always get a kick out of evangelizing atheists and how they're so desperate to prove that they're good and usually better than us religious types. Well, Matthew, I'm certainly glad you get a kick out of something, but your description, desperate to prove they're better, describes religious people far more closely than anyone else. Now that atheists dare to point out that you people aren't morally superior as you claim, and they can prove it, you are on the defensive. Unfortunately for you, none of the statistics favor your argument. Whether you look at prison stats, divorce rates, out-of-wedlock births, venereal disease, suicide, murder, or any other measure of morality, you guys don't beat anyone. Which makes me wonder, if you credit the Bible for your morality, just how bad would you people be without it? Now that I think about it, if the Bible is what keeps you even close to the rest of us in morality, then by all means keep that Bible close by. I don't even want to imagine what you people would be capable of without the threat of eternal damnation to keep you in line. He continues. Dawkins writes on the charity's website, when donating via non-believers giving aid, you are helping to counter the scandalous myth that only the religious care about their fellow humans. While we should all applaud Mr. Dawkins' altruistic efforts to help his fellow man, I'm just not sure he's making the point he thinks he's making. Matthew, the point he's making is that you Christians have spread scandalous lies about atheists. Matthew continues, If Dawkins is running this charity to show up religion and helping Haitians is only a secondary consequence, then we could hardly claim that what he's doing is good by most definitions. Well, Matthew, since the only reason you people give is because you expect to be rewarded in heaven, how do you figure you are doing good by any definition? At least when we give, we don't expect anything in return. That is altruism, something that you know nothing about. He continues, because if that's true, then it would seem that the greatest value of Haitian lives to Dawkins is how they make Dawkins look. Matthew, what do you mean, if it's true? You already believe it's true. You couldn't be honest if your life depended on it. He continues, but let's give Dawkins the benefit of the doubt because us religious types like to do that. No, Matthew, you religious types don't like to do that. You just know that you can't back up your accusation. So you put it out there for people to think about and then weasel out and try to make yourself look good. He continues, if he's helping people because he wants to help people, then I almost hate to tell him that he's kind of supporting some of our arguments. While Dawkins argues that he can be good without God, I think he's actually only proving that Richard Dawkins can be good while not acknowledging God. Matthew, when you give aid, you are not acknowledging Allah. So how are you any different? He goes on, I have to wonder from what philosophical grounding does Dawkins' altruism emanate? Matthew, someone who must be told how to think by ancient desert tent makers could not possibly understand the concept of altruism. If you had a logical bone in your superstitious body, I might hope that you could at least become an objectivist. But to do that, you would have to give up the ghost, and we all know you are too frightened of the threats in the Bible to ever consider that alternative. Matthew continues, why is other human life worth anything if there is no God? Matthew, you just made my point. Without being able to worship an invisible ghost, it is beyond your mental capabilities to even imagine why people don't kill each other. With reasoning abilities that feeble, why even have a brain? Why not just donate it to science and enjoy the breeze? He goes on, from what philosophical groundwork is he basing his good works on? Matthew, since you think so highly of stone tablets, how about the Code of Hammurabi? How about the Vedas, which have guided the Indian culture to a far more peaceful existence than has your Bible? How about the Buddhist philosophies, which have also outperformed your Bible? In fact, I can't think of any culture that has as bloody and brutal a history as the one guided by your holy book. Any philosophical groundwork easily beats your moral instruction manual. Matthew goes on, Dawkins, it would seem to me, hasn't defined his terms and is only borrowing our definition of good. Matthew, if Dawkins borrowed your definition of good, we would be re-enslaving Africans, refusing women the right to vote, and executing homosexuals and non-believers. Your definition of good is the last definition any atheist would ever use. Matthew continues, because without our definitions, he'd have to ask the question, what is good without God? And that's something I haven't seen answered yet. And you never will, Matthew. As long as you keep your eyes tightly sealed with Bible glue, you will forever be deluded into believing whatever you want to believe, instead of reality. According to your logic, there is no good anywhere outside the Christian world. How utterly devoid of common sense you have to be to believe that. That is the power of delusion. Matthew continues, in fact, I think Dawkins' efforts to do good is one of the best arguments for innate knowledge of right and wrong. Matthew, did you just switch sides? An innate knowledge of right and wrong is the atheist's argument. That just negated your whole argument. Are you sure you're okay? He continues, I almost hate to inform Mr. Dawkins that his little plot is actually helpful to believers, as we believe that no matter what you espouse verbally, each man has written on his soul the ability to tell right from wrong. Matthew, you're arguing the atheist position better than any atheist could. We completely agree that humans have that innate ability. We just don't require that it was put there by a floating vapor with an inordinate fondness for Hebrews. Matthew goes on, and while Dawkins denies it, his actions indicate otherwise. There is a moral sense which you can ignore, but your choosing to ignore or embrace it has no effect on its existence, much like God himself. Matthew, how is the existence of a moral sense, which we can prove exists in a thousand ways, like God himself, who you cannot prove exists even in one way? Matthew concludes, but we're glad for the help anyway. Thanks. Matthew, you are not glad for the help. The Haitians are glad for the help. You have made it clear that you question Dawkins' motives and resent his help. If you people were even capable of making an honest statement, it would probably bring on the rapture. You're welcome. Now for the listeners, I have a suggestion. Go to my website at theskepticarena.com and download the Word document associated with this podcast. In it, you will find a link where you can read about how the Christians are helping the Haitians. The link is too long to repeat on this podcast, but you can find it in the document. And now we move to the science segment. Today's topic, alligators and birds share lung structure and ancestor. Alligators and birds share a breathing mechanism which may have helped their ancestors dominate Earth more than 200 million years ago. Research published in the journal Science found that like birds, in alligators, air flows in one direction. Birds' lung structure allows them to breathe when flying in low oxygen. This breathing may have helped a common ancestor of birds and alligators thrive in the hypoxic period of the Triassic. It might explain a mystery that has been around for quite some time. The mystery in question is why the archosaurs came to dominate Earth after the planet's worst mass extinction 251 million years ago. Archosaurs evolved into two different branches which developed into crocodilians, dinosaurs, flying pterosaurs, and eventually birds. Synapses, which evolved to include mammals, had been dominant in the Permian period before the mass extinction. Some survived but were toppled from their perch by the archosaurs. Any mammal-like synapsid survivors were teeny little things hiding in cracks because they could not compete. It wasn't until the die-off of the large dinosaurs 65 million years ago that mammals made a comeback and started occupying body sizes larger than an opossum. To demonstrate alligator lung mechanisms, the scientists measured airflow in anesthetized animals, showing it flows in one direction rather than in and out of chambers. They also pumped water containing tiny fluorescent beads into the lungs of dead alligators to observe the flow. The researchers believe the similarity in lung structure may explain why some animals were better able to adapt after the extinction, when oxygen levels dropped. Dr. Farmer said, we know that birds are really good at breathing in hypoxic conditions. They can fly at altitudes that would kill a mammal. Many archosaurs, such as pterosaurs, apparently were capable of sustaining vigorous exercise. Lung design may have played a key role in this capacity. Why do birds have these very different lungs? That's been a puzzle, but now we can date it back to the common ancestor of birds and crocodilians. Dr. Farmer added, it implies that all dinosaurs, herbivores like Triceratops, and carnivores like Tyrannosaurus, had bird-like lungs. And now the arena goes abroad. Today we travel to Paris, where a Paris imam backs proposed burqa ban. A French imam active in Muslim dialogue with Jews has backed a law against full-face veils, parting ways with most Muslim leaders in France who urge Parliament not to vote for a planned burqa ban. Hassan Chalgoumi, whose mosque stands in northern Paris, where many Muslims live, said women who wanted to cover their faces should move to Saudi Arabia or other Muslim countries where that is a tradition. My comment: any takers on how long this guy will be allowed to live? Continuing, France's National Assembly is likely to pass a resolution soon denouncing full veils and to try in coming months to hammer out a law forbidding them. President Nicolas Sarkozy calls the veils an affront to women's dignity, unwelcome in France, home to about 5 million Muslims. Fewer than 2,000 women wear the veils, known here as burqas, although most are Middle Eastern niqabs showing the eyes. Hassan Chalgoumi said, "Yes, I am for a legal ban of the burqa, which has no place in France, a country where women have been voting since 1945. My comment: this man is the very definition of courage. Continuing, Chalgoumi, who has received death threats for his promotion of dialogue with Jews, said that full-face veils had no basis in Islam and belonged to a tiny minority tradition reflecting an ideology that scuttles the Muslim religion. The burqa is a prison for women, a tool of sexist domination and Islamic indoctrination," said Chalgoumi, whose mosque stands in Drancy, site of a wartime camp where Jews were detained before transport to Nazi concentration camps. Chalgoumi criticized some of the tougher measures proposed by conservative politicians, such as imposing fines or cutting off child support payments for veiled women. But the Tunisian-born imam, who is a naturalized French citizen, agreed France should not grant citizenship to immigrant women who cover their faces. He said, "Having French nationality means wanting to take part in society, at school and at work. But with a bit of cloth over their faces, what can these women share with us? If they want to wear the veil, they can go to a country where it's the tradition, like Saudi Arabia." A parliamentary commission studying the issue, which has been discussed alongside a wider public debate about national identity, is due to publish its recommendations next Tuesday. French Muslim leaders and many opposition politicians oppose any ban, saying it would alienate Muslims and possibly violate civil rights laws. My comment: those politicians have been shamed by a Muslim leader with courage and reason. There is no way this guy will ever live to see Christmas, and that's unfortunate. And now for the final segment of the show, famous quotes. Today, Morris Cohen. I was unable to determine which Morris Cohen wrote this, so I have no information on him. And it's a rather long quote. Here is the quote from Morris Cohen. "To be sure, the vast majority of people who are untrained can accept the results of science only on authority. But there is obviously an important difference between an establishment that is open and invites everyone to come, study its methods, and suggest improvement, and one that regards the questioning of its credentials as due to wickedness of heart, such as Cardinal Newman attributed to those who question the infallibility of the Bible. Rational science treats its credit notes as always redeemable on demand, while non-rational authoritarianism regards the demand for the redemption of its paper as a disloyal lack of faith."
Are you ready, Bruce?